You're listening to the Trim Radio Network. We cut the bull and serve the truth.
You're listening to The Brighter Life Show with your host, natural health practitioner, Dr. Leslie Berkland, and the Brighter Life Institute founder and vibration expert, Nicholas Brighter. Topics span from holistic lifestyles, meditation, natural medicine, spirituality, and finding your joy. Here at The Brighter Life Show, we want to hear from you. Call us at Trim Radio Network and ask questions or share your most uplifting story. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everybody, to The Brighter Life Show. I'm Dr. Leslie Berkland, and I am here with Nicholas Brighter. He is the owner of the Brighter Institute. Welcome, Nick. How's it going?
It's going good. I'm glad to be here.
Aha. Okay. Well, I'm glad that you are here. So, anyway, today's episode, what episode are we on? Is this 14?
I believe this is, episode 14.
Oh, wow. Okay. So we're in season two, episode four of season two, but all in all, it's the 14th episode that we produced for Trim Radio Network. And we really appreciate the owners of Trim. They are 100% veteran owned. And we're just really happy that they're allowing our show to broadcast on their network. So a big shout out and thank you to Trim Radio Network, especially Rascala. He is our producer, so he's the guy that's in the booth that makes us sound good. So thanks, Rascala. He's also one of the owners of the Trim Radio Network. Okay, so today's episode is going to be about dementia.
Okay, dementia?
Dementia, yes. Formerly known as, people just would say somebody's demented or senile or someone that has, you know, senility. But now it's dementia, and it is a disease. It's a horrible, awful disease. I had my stepfather died of dementia. And so I witnessed the decline, you know, when he was early onset, and then the decline and the ultimate passing. His name was Dwayne. And my sister Lindsay and I, wrote a book called Daughters of Dementia. And the book is our experience from different perspectives. She's his biological daughter. I am his stepdaughter. Mm-hmm. She was living at home when he was first diagnosed with dementia, and I was long gone and married. I'm quite a few years older than my little sister. And so it's perspective. It's just different perspectives of seeing the same thing. We both witnessed the decline and witnessed everything about dementia and everything about my mother being the caretaker. And then when he went on to be in a nursing home, and then, you know, just watching this decline and everything that we went through. So this particular episode, it's really geared towards somebody that is a caretaker, someone that's taking care of somebody in their world. It could be a spouse, it could be a parent, it could be a grandparent, it could be, you know, just somebody that they're caring for that has dementia. They could actually work in a dementia wing at a nursing home.
Okay.
Or a nurse that works, you know, in a hospital that specializes. You know, some of the clinics specialize in dementia. So
outside or inside the home, is that mostly going to be the person's family?
Odds are that it will be either a spouse. Typically, it is a spouse. She can get, or he can get, some help. They have outside sources, you know, that can help them that come in. My mom will get into that, but my mother had somebody that would come in once a week to give my stepfather a bath. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was even twice a week. So help him go to the bathroom, but, you know, bring him in the shower. I mean, she just simply didn't have the strength.
Oh, okay.
So, and that was, you know, before he went to a nursing home. And she just loved him so much and wanted to keep him with her as long as she could. And then when it gets to the point where she just basically couldn't handle it, then it's time to go to the nursing home. A lot of people actually will keep the demented person too long because their reasoning is they're afraid. They're afraid for a couple reasons, but the main reason is usually Social Security or who's going to cover it. Oftentimes, there'll be older people. They may be over 65. They're both on Social Security. And the fear is that if one of them has dementia and they go to the nursing home, that the person that's living in their home is not going to be able to survive. They just won't have the funds because the money will be taken away. And that's not always the case.
I see. Okay. That Social Security could be sort of the last holdout for why someone might wait longer.
It typically is because people need to just call the Social Security office and ask.
Especially if they're associating it with, you know, if I don't get my Social Security, how will I survive?
Exactly.
And so it's a survival instinct.
It is. And so, I mean, they do care for the person and love them and want them to be with mm-hmm. them, but there's a point where they just can't handle it. And they have a fear of calling the Social Security office. They have a fear if they just don't want to know. If the person's in the nursing home, then all of their Social Security.
Or if someone finds out, maybe he'll be taken away and her Social Security or his or her Social Security taken away.
That very is a fear, but that's, you know, they can't make you put your loved one in a nursing home.
I think what you mentioned, that the uncertainty.
Yes.
That seems to be the important part. Is that right?
Yes. And my recommendation is to just call the Social Security office. They are on your side. They want to help you. They will make it work. So, you know, if you're two people, a married couple, and you're both collecting Social Security and you're pretty much living off of it, they don't take it all away. You know, they just don't. They don't take your home away. You know, there's certain things like your car, your home, you can have X amount of dollars in the bank, and then it's virtually paid for. Now, once a person does pass away, I wasn't really going to get into Social Security, they do have a 6-year look back. So if they discover that you own, you know, lots and lots of property and that your worth of the person that was in the nursing home is way more than you had shared with the Social Security office, then the 6-year look back, they can come back and recoup the money that the government actually paid to the nursing home.
Okay. And how do you know how common that is?
Well, I don't think that it's that common because if somebody has that kind of wealth, they would just pay to have somebody either come in their house full time or pay straight out for the nursing home. So the people that are most concerned are the ones that don't need to be concerned.
Okay.
So, yes. And I do have a couple stories that I will share about people. One lady that did probably should have had her husband go to the nursing home because she ended up going a little goofy. So, you know, working and dealing
at her limit, taking care of him.
Yes.
So, and other things that part of life, I suppose.
Well, it's hard. It's a hard job. She just didn't know that was an option or didn't believe that it was an option. So she kept her husband with her. I'll just tell you the story now. She kept her husband with her. And how can I say this? If you are an easygoing person pre-dementia, it's the demented person, they're easier to deal with. If you're somebody that is more a high-level stress person, they are not going to be the best dementia patient. Myself.
If you're disagreeable or the kind of person that's not easily told what to do.
Exactly. Mm. I would probably be a horrible dementia patient because I'm the type of person, I need details. I need to know what's going on. Why is someone telling me what to do? Who are they? And in this case with this elderly lady, she was about 75 and her husband was in his early 80s and he was deep into dementia. He didn't know who she was. He thought that he was being held captive. And so he would run outside. He was always trying to escape. She had to pull him off of fences. She taped him to a chair so that he wouldn't move, like just big, you know, electrical tape to a chair so he wouldn't escape and she could feed him. And she ended up abusing him, basically. It got to the point where she abused him. I
Now, what would qualify as abuse?
She would beat the crap out of him, and he had bruises, and she would. Yes, it was bad. It wasn't just verbal abuse. The verbal abuse, the demented person or a person with dementia may not even remember it the next day.
Mm-hmm. But well, they're probably not going to remember it no matter what it is.
Right. They may not, but that's not that's not an excuse because they're still feeling it at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, the person that has dementia needs to feel that you're a good person, that you're looking out for them, and that you have, you know, interest in their well-being. They may not know you, but they'll think that you're a nice person. But they get you know, very paranoid. They think that you're trying to kill them. They think the government is trying to kill them. And it's so hard on the caretaker. In this woman's case, yes, that was, you know, horrible what she did to him. But she didn't have to do that. She could have. He definitely was. It was time for him to be in a nursing home.
And I imagine that as the memory decreases, in particular when they forget things about the caretaker, especially if it's a spouse, that it can be perceived as almost personal.
Well, it is personal. I mean, person that is forgotten.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
They can't help but make it personal, and it's hurtful. However, the person that has dementia does not do it on purpose. They do not select, I'm going to pick you to forget today.
Right.
So it's not personal, but the feeling of it being personal is real, and it is hurtful.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of what I was, that it would be hurtful. And yeah, I mean, it's an interesting dynamic. I don't know how to avoid that, but I guess awareness, although anyone in that situation would be aware that, I think.
Yes and no. A lot of times the caretakers are not equipped. They don't have the experience. They don't work and they're too personally involved.
Oh, okay. Their perspective, they might not have perspective of what's common among people with dementia. They only know what is the situation with this one person with dementia. So they might take things more personally than...
Of course they do. And they're not trained.
Okay.
They're not trained. I mean, all of a sudden, your loved one has dementia and you have zero training.
Do you think that a person in that situation simply being around other people with dementia, or at least talking to other caretakers and sort of discovering how common certain things are, that would...
It does.
Improve that?
Indeed, it does. Okay. Support groups. There are support groups.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Yes, there are some support groups. I have a story of a horrible support group, which I will share. But first, why don't we talk about what dementia is, you know? And
before we hear about this horrible support group?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. Oh, gosh. Okay, I didn't set that up very well. So dementia, you think of that like an umbrella. So everyone will say Alzheimer's. So you hear that and people was like, in fact, I had a guy tell me once, well, my dad didn't have dementia. He had Alzheimer's. And I'm like, well, but Alzheimer's is a type of dementia. There's about 10 different types of dementia, Alzheimer's being one. And the reason why it's called Alzheimer is because there was a doctor who was born in about 1860, and I think he died in about 1915. And so he died pretty young. And he's the one that discovered this type of dementia, the type of dementia called Alzheimer's. But people use Alzheimer's universally when they mean dementia. Like, for example, my stepfather did not have Alzheimer's. He had vascular dementia. It's one of the 10. But if somebody says Alzheimer's, you know, we're so used to using that interchangeably with dementia, although technically it is a type of dementia.
Okay.
So now, how is somebody diagnosed with dementia? I think that most people know that it's a memory loss disease. And what would you know if somebody just said dementia? What does that mean?
Some type of mental disease that's likely to be memory, or I wouldn't necessarily know for sure that it was memory. I wasn't aware that it definitely meant memory. I just knew that,
It is usually a memory robbing disease.
Okay.
And you have, you know, cognitively you're in decline. So there's a lot of other things that happen, but primarily it is your memory. And that's with all of the different types of dementia, it affects your memory.
Okay.
So
now Alzheimer's. How do you say it?
Alzheimer.
How do you pronounce it? Alzheimer.
But most people say Alzheimer's, and that's fine. That's fine if you want to pronounce it that way. Now, I've had a couple of people call it old-timers.
Old-timers.
Because they think that, because a lot of people are older.
He's got old-timers.
He has old-timers. You know, when they say that to me, I'm perfectly fine. I'm perfectly fine. They want to call it old-timers. That's not what it is, but you know, it's not like I'm going to say, well, you know, it's Alzheimer from doctor, you know, from...
Alzheimer's, I was aware, was definitely a memory. And dementia, I was aware, was usually memory. But I guess I'm just learning today that it's always memory.
It's always memory related and then cognitive decline. However, just remember... dementia is like a big umbrella with 10 different types of dementia, Alzheimer's being one of them.
Okay.
Okay. So that is something where people, they do get that a little bit confused, but there's different stages. Stage one is a very interesting stage, and this is actually from the Alzheimer's Association, which I am a member of the Alzheimer's Association, and but it does apply to all forms of dementia, all different types of dementia. And stage one is no cognitive impairment. In fact, you're not impaired at all. I'm a little unclear myself why they even call it stage one, because it's really pre-dementia. You don't there's no signs that you have dementia.
How does a person even get diagnosed then as stage one if they...
It's almost impossible because you have to be in stage two, and then they would determine and guess a date of when stage one, meaning you're sort of that at that stage where, quite frankly, stage one, there is no cognitive problems, and there is, so I don't have an answer.
So stage one is mostly for them to determine how far into stage two you are. So they retroactively figure out when was stage one so they can sort of discover the progression?
Yeah, more than likely. Now, there are some doctors, when they do some testing, where it is genetic. It can be genetic. And so they have geneticists that will...
Ah, okay.
So
those people might discover that they're in stage one then, I guess, if they're sort of...
I can't even see how that could be. They could just say that they're just simply more at risk.
So stage one's almost too difficult to...
I'm going to say that. So, you know, maybe somebody will call in and tell us
that... We'd have to ask a neurologist, maybe?
A neurologist could not tell you if you're in stage one because...
Oh, I mean the answer to that question.
Oh, I see what you're saying. A neurologist may, but it would be unlikely that you would go to a neurologist to have an MRI done or some sort of imaging scan to determine if you may have dementia if you don't have any memory loss at all.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
If you just went tomorrow and decided, I'm going to go to a neurologist to see if I have, you know.
Exactly. Why would someone get tested at all?
Well, there would be rare cases. If you have an identical twin that has it and you don't, you may. If you have both sides of your family, you know, both of your grandparents had passed away, both of your mom and your dad who are unrelated, there's reasons why you'd be at higher risk. So that there'd be rare occasions that somebody may want to go in, although the imaging may not show anything. In fact, they don't even know exactly what they're looking for, but it's not a bad idea because it gives them a baseline so that when you are in stage two, they would know when it started.
Okay.
Now, stage two is a very, very mild decline. So, you know, little things that sometimes I think I'm in stage two, just little memory lapses.
At what point is someone going to not be able
to, so it, stage it, three.
It's stage two. A person can still learn new things.
Probably not, but they don't know it yet. It hasn't. It's not obvious to them, and it, well, it's never really obvious to them. But it's not obvious to their family and friends or the people that are closest to them in stage two. So people typically are not even diagnosed at stage. They can be, and they have been, but it's not as common as stage three and four. So in stage two, it's what they refer to it as very mild decline. They usually, you know, they may get a medical exam if somebody, you know, again, if they're at risk. But it's still not necessarily apparent, you know, to their family or friends or coworkers. At this stage, they're driving. They're typically working their job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're forgetting things like, where's my keys? Or they may have forget a word.
And new things might not be too pressing for them. In other words, you know, things don't change so much in a year or two where they're going to need to learn a bunch of, you know, new things for a job, maybe that might be 10 years down the line.
And that's why it may not be, you know, so obvious to somebody else or you know, even to themselves.
Although, so I know I've heard in your father's case that I think he worked as a marketing or advertising executive.
Yes.
And so from what I understand, from what I heard, he was only able to do things at some point when things sort of changed over to digital, where they became completely digital, that there was some sort of learning. He wasn't able to adapt to that or something like that. So I thought
that's
I heard
exactly
from you
what
before.
Happened, Nick. He was an ad man. And he did huge advertising campaigns. We called him like the Darren Stevens. You know, you're too young, but there was an old TV show called Bewitched, and Darren Stevens was a star. He was this witch's husband, and he was an ad man. They did huge advertising campaigns. And
oh, that actor was an ad man?
Well, that's the part he played.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So Dwayne was the Darren Stevens of advertising agencies. So he was like, they call it an ad man. He did everything. So he did TV commercials and print ads and brochures and reports. And he has.
I imagine a lot of print ads wouldn't be too different, though, right?
Well, it's different because the technology changed. He was doing very much the cut and paste. He had this machine that would take pictures. It would take a photograph and turn it into like little dots. And then that's when you can run it off on a press. He was so behind the times. This is when he was definitely had dementia that he started losing clients. Then he had a nice client base and he lost them.
Is that because he wasn't giving them in the format they wanted? Like they maybe wanted a digital.
Well, that was a big thing because, of course, they wanted it digitally because what are they going to do when he hands them this cut and paste? I mean, he had an X-Acto knife.
And they want a JPEG file.
Well, oh, yeah.
Right, or yes, a bitmap yes, or something. Yeah.
It wasn't even close. And so it was actually sad.
I'm guessing. I don't know exactly.
But that was later on.
So it was something along those lines?
Yes,
though?
Yes. So moving on. So stage three is called a mild cognitive decline. And they consider that an early stage, but the symptoms are going to start a little bit. Your family and friends are going to notice, you know, some things.
In stage three.
In stage three. In other words, you sometimes you can't say a word. You can't think of something. And I'll give you an example. There was one guy I was reading about and he couldn't remember a toaster. So he'd say, you know, where's that thing that you put bread in and it burns it?
Okay.
Okay, because he just could not recall that there was a word called the toaster.
Okay.
There was an item. There was a toaster. So,
because if you could even describe it, you know, that thing that toasts bread.
Yeah, that thing that burned bread.
Then if you knew it toasted bread, then you'd probably remember the word toaster at that point.
But yeah, so I mean, that's just an example. And so that's stage three.
So I think I'm discovering something there. But what he forgot was not just the name of the toaster. He forgot what the toaster did, which is that it toasts bread.
Yes, exactly. It was this thing that
specific way that it burns it. It toasts it.
Now, I'll tell you a little quickie. There, I was reading years ago.
That didn't come out as funny as it. I thought it would in my head.
No, that was hilarious. You know, I was laughing inside.
Okay.
So just not outwardly. So there's an article that I read in Reader's Digest, and this is like 15 or maybe even 20 years ago, and I was just on a flight, and I just liked reading Reader's Digest. And I was reading it, and there's a woman talking about her experience with her father that had dementia. And he was obviously, he had a great personality pre-dementia, but he called everything a microwave. So much that
can you give an example?
Well, the family actually knew what he meant. Like he could say, let's say he was going to go to the store and buy some milk.
I can already figure out that contextually, if he's using it for everything, you can. But give an example. So he's going to the store to get some milk.
I'll give you an example that you might understand. Okay. Remember the Smurfs?
Yeah.
Everything was Smurfy?
Right. That's kind of, yeah.
It was like that. So he would use the word microwave.
I'm going to Smurf to the store and right. Smurf some milk.
Yes. But okay. He would say, I'm going to go get in the microwave and go to the microwave to buy some microwave.
Oh,
but the family
be.
Actually knew what he was saying because they knew they were out of milk. They knew that he could get in a car. Yeah. They knew that he was going to go to a store.
And they know that he's holding an empty milk carton at that moment saying that.
So everything, every noun was was microwave. So an action or whatever, it was a noun, it was a microwave or a verb. So, yeah. But they learned to understand him.
I wonder why that would, what kind of dementia that is.
You know, I'm not certain, but because it didn't say in the article, you know, specifically of the 10. Now they keep adding, you know, anyone that has a cognitive decline or memory loss is under the, you know, heading of dementia, but they keep adding to it. There's Lewy body, which is a protein issue that helps. Like what my stepfather had was the vascular dementia, which means that the blood isn't flowing to your brain, and then that affects you. You know, he had had a heart attack, so they don't say a heart attack because heart attacks don't necessarily cause dementia, but if you lose oxygen and blood flow to your brain, then that's why he ultimately got dementia. So it was because of that. So I don't know the microwave guy because she didn't say. She may have referred to it as Alzheimer's.
It's interesting that everything would be, I mean, just, you know, what's the thinking in his head, I guess. Is he aware that he's doing that?
Oh, no, because he was going to the microwave to get some microwave and bring back some microwave and then put microwave on his microwave.
So
he could finish eating his microwave.
I know I've heard, you know, when people have their left and right hemispheres, there's some illnesses where, for whatever reason, the cures to, or the fixes to split apart, to sever the connection between the right and left hemispheres of the brain, and that those people have a disconnect between, I believe, what they hear and what they see, I think, or there's certain disconnects they have where, because both brains don't have all that information, it's sort of like they might be able to give a certain answer if they were writing it down, but they might not be able to tell you it in words.
Okay, that is fascinating. And I think I did read actually about that, and I'm not sure.
Or vice versa.
Yeah.
Like they need to have the answer given to them in words before they can give it in words. But I don't exactly know... you know, what information is sort of segmented in the left and right brain, but it was something like that.
Okay, that is.
And so the microwave example that you gave the guy that's making a microwave for using the word microwave for all his nouns.
Yes.
To me, it, you know, I'm
and
just,
verbs, his in, actions.
In verbs, I'm just sort of envisioning it like if he's not aware that he's saying microwave for everything, you know, how is he interpreting it, I guess?
I think you're right. It probably was. In his mind, he was thinking that he was getting in a car and that he was going to drive to the store.
And do you think
that he was going to buy some milk, that he was going to bring the milk back and he was going to pour it on his cereal.
And
he was going to microwave it on his microwave.
And so,
then he was going to microwave it.
So I guess what I'm wondering is, when he's describing this, is he hearing himself say the words properly?
We may never know.
Okay.
Because I believe that, I'm going to take a guess that he is hearing himself say it properly.
Interesting.
Because he would just have normal conversations and then go to the microwave and do the microwave things that he had to do. So it was just an interesting article that I read about this gal talking about, you know, her father and the microwave story. So stage four is moderate cognitive decline. And that's when you just have a decrease in events. Like you might have not know exactly if it's close to Christmas, if it's close to, you know, a family event, or even what year it is, or even what month it is.
Okay.
Something really interesting about
it. So how off on the year can a person be in that? And
well, when you get deeper into dementia, sometimes you are, like in Duane's case, in many cases that mm-hmm. I've read about case studies, they are back in college. So they can be in their 80s, but in their mind,
mm-hmm.
they're, you know.
That's interesting because I don't know if it's like this for all dementia, but I know for some dementia, the memory loss sort of goes in the order that the memory happened, meaning it progressively goes back in time, which is interesting when you think about it, because just sort of when you think about your past, it's everything sort of, I mean, to me, everything's sort of remembered in equal strength that is remembered, I suppose. To some
I remember
degree.
Things more recent than I do back, but with dementia patients, it's the opposite, because they remember clearly things that happened in the past.
That's what I can't really imagine is, I can't imagine waking up and thinking that yesterday was, you know, 20 years ago and imagining it very clearly. But maybe it's not a clear memorization that they have.
Duane often spoke of his days when he went to the University of Washington.
Okay.
He...
Is this before his dementia or...
This is during dementia. Dementia, he believed he was still attending the University of Washington quite often.
Didn't he work at the University of Washington? Or I thought you mentioned something about
He loved it. Everything he did, he went to all the Husky games. Even when he was in deep in delusions, there was a time where he was deep in delusion and was seeing outside. My mom had his hospital bed in the middle of the living room. Because it was just easier for her to walk around it and take care of him. And he would talk about seeing angels outside. Mm-hmm. Seeing angels outside. He could see through the kitchen window and in their backyard, and he could see angels. And he would describe these angels, which was very interesting. But then...
I would be interested in actually hearing that description.
It's one of my chapters in my book, Daughters of Dementia.
Which I'm remembering now, I actually remember...
Okay.
Because I definitely read that chapter.
Okay. That's probably why. But then at the same time, so of course my mom and I are thinking this is, you know, prophetic. I mean, this is like he really is seeing angels. Then the next thing he would see would be the entire Husky football team.
Okay.
You know, out there practicing. So it was really interesting.
Ooh, okay.
So that would be a delusion. The angels maybe weren't a delusion, but I can... promise you the entire Husky football team
mm-hmm.
was not in their backyard.
I'm just trying to identify, you know, from a vibrational point of view, what sort of state is he in? And that kind of leads me to believe it would have been probably a lower one.
Perhaps, but something other things are interesting. He could play the piano by ear. He could hear one song once. It could be on the radio. Someone could hum something. He could go to the piano and play it. So it's called playing by ear. And he was born deaf in one ear. But he had this gift. But in the middle of dementia, and even towards mm-hmm. the end, my mom could put his hands on a keyboard and tell him, play Louie Louie, his favorite song to play. And he could it perfectly.
When did he learn that? Do you know what age?
Probably young, because he always would go to any piano and start singing and playing Louie Louie. So,
okay,
probably back in his Husky, his UW days.
So, yeah, I guess the description. I'm still kind of stuck on that. I suppose I don't really know where he would have been, where his sort of level would have been there, but
I'm not sure, because the angels. Let me see, how can I say this? He was very, very religious. Mm-hmm. And so thinking about angels would not be something uncommon.
Okay. So that I don't necessarily associate with being low level to be seen that, although it is an indication that someone might be at a low level and misidentifying something. But it might not necessarily be. I mean, it could actually, maybe it is angels they're seeing, and if they are, I would not say that that's a low energy thing. But the football team sort of tells me that it's definitely just the...
it's delusions.
It's a delusion from his dementia, which would mean that it's probably a low vibration thing, and which is... exactly. That's kind of what I'm. It's sort.
And the whole disease is sad. Everything about. It really is truly just a wretched disease. So in stage,
because you want to, when people are at the end of their life, you want them to, be ascending towards the at least at those last moments, because people don't like to think that others are suffering. Towards the end of their life, but.
Or that they see the beauty of death, and that,
right.
Because.
Although what I will say is that these delusions he was having are, from the examples you gave me, they are sort of more positive descriptions, which would lead me to believe that he was a generally positive person.
Yeah, his life
was. Optimistic person.
He was very optimistic. He was charismatic. It was funny. Funny. My mom fell in love with his humor.
So, okay, yeah, that adds up. That doesn't surprise me from that description.
But then in the moment of death, and he's not, stuck in the body that has, his spirit.
I think a lot of other people would be seen, if they're having delusions at that point, then they'd be seen some more obviously lower demonic things. And so if he's seen these things that are sort of neutral or things that people associate with, angels, like divine, that someone would have to be kind of positive to not be seeing things that are going to scare them, basically.
I think that this was something positive for him to see. I don't think he was seeing a bunch of fallen angels.
Right.
Lucifer and
it's sort of better to hear that. So so the experience wouldn't have been so bad for him. It might have even been a good thing for him.
I believe that it was something very, very positive.
Okay.
So in this case, a reduction in memory, history, which is especially
is that stage three.
We're on stage four. So
stage four, okay.
It's considered moderate cognitive decline. And so you have a definite reduction in your memory. And as of your personal history, you may not remember if you even have children.
So it's stage three, because I know stage three is where you mentioned that people will sort of first kind of notice.
There's a huge jump between three and four. I can just say that.
Okay.
I mean, three, the performance of little social tasks, others may notice that you're not really remembering things or doing it properly.
But at four, you're not remembering things further in the past.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I've just observed based on, and these are, from research and people, working that have been diagnosed, and that, you know, psychologists, psychiatrists.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and by the way, it's typically diagnosed by either a psychiatrist that your primary has sent you on to, if you appear that you have a lot of memory loss, or a neurologist. Those are sort of the two top type of MDs that would diagnose, some form of dementia.
Okay.
So, and stage four.
Oh, I apologize. Did you say your primary?
Your primary would refer you to either a psychiatrist or a neurologist.
Okay, that makes sense. So,
but your primary would recognize it and then send you to a specialist that may order an MRI.
Okay, and an MRI can
well, they would take one and then they would take one later.
Yeah,
they don't actually have certain things that they're looking for because they don't really know.
Oh, I see. Okay, so even MRI wouldn't be able to discover stage one unless they had an MRI not too long before,
or one after, so that you can show the difference.
Yeah,
if there's something different. Okay. Now I've seen a couple scans of mm-hmm. somebody that was, you know, at the end stage of dementia, and it does look different. So when you're getting towards the end stage, but it would with an elderly person anyway.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it's difficult, but then
I wasn't actually aware of that. So an elderly person that's completely fine mentally, let's say they don't have any mental disease.
It's just age, like your bones. Your bones are going to mm-hmm. look different between somebody that is a young, you know, 20-year-old versus a 85-year-old. You know, their bones, I mean, things are, you know, we just start deteriorating. And then
I wasn't aware that those MRI scans would look different in the brain.
I was reading an article recently that dementia patients are donating their brains to science, to research, you know, dementia research. And I remember reading the article thinking, how could a dementia patient do that and sign off on that?
Yeah, that's interesting.
They
must have been someone that was a organ donor before.
Probably maybe. The person that is their
caretaker.
Find it. You know, if it's a spouse, they would have they have to make decisions for them. So probably, but the article specifically said
a power of attorney, maybe.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Okay.
And
that is something that I imagine they would want to get as soon as they find out certain things.
Nick, you are absolutely right. Because what happens is, especially when you're at stage three, mm-hmm. let's say you own a company and you have many, many employees and you're responsible for the livelihood of people. That's the stage three is you're making poor choices. So you could actually ruin a company. Stage three and stage four, typically they don't want to give away their car because they can drive.
Okay.
Dwayne drove all through stage four. He was perfect until my mom finally took his keys away.
I guess most people probably would actually be fine. I imagine most people with dementia would actually be fine driving until their memory deteriorates to that point, which
they get lost.
Is sort of like
they usually get lost.
I mean, that's sort of at the end. I would imagine they would be in very late stage before they're actually unable to safely drive, which, when I think about it, that's actually kind of a good thing that's not one of the first things to go, because that's probably how we'd find out if that was.
Well, the thing, but keep in mind that they can drive because it's something that they have done since they were 16 years old.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
So they don't forget a stoplight. They don't forget. So they don't get in a lot of accidents. It's not all of a sudden they don't forget what a road is.
Right.
But they will get lost because they will forget the terrain around them, the environment around them. They may not recognize a city anymore.
And unless they've lived in that area for many, many years, then they would definitely forget the area that they're in.
And cities change so often, and buildings change, and things change.
Then there's that too. So, I mean, just...
So they become disorientated.
I know the last time I was in Seattle, it looked different. And I could easily get lost in some areas, but I grew up in the area.
And so how different would you say? I mean, really enough where you couldn't, like the roads look different or just the buildings around?
Downtown, especially near the waterfront, probably because the aqueduct is not there anymore. Well, I'm sure I could get around, but I didn't recognize it at all, I guess, the waterfront area. So, I mean, I suppose some, I didn't recognize a lot of it. There is a lot of it that I actually did recognize, I'm realizing now, but.
Well, imagine being a dementia, you know, somebody that has dementia, and all of a sudden you're somewhere that you don't recognize, you know, any of the homes at all. So that is difficult. Now, the interesting thing about driving, it is very common to have a fight with a dementia patient, especially if the dementia sufferer is a male who identifies with his car. He's always had a certain car. His life is his car. You know, it's a specialty car. He loves certain cars. In Duane's case, my stepfather, he did not identify with a car. So when the keys were taken away, my mom just explained that they don't have a car anymore. And so he was like, oh, okay, you know.
But
there wasn't a fight, but often there is a fight that is something.
From what I can tell, though, the reason for taking away the car isn't so much the danger to other drivers because they can actually drive just fine. It's because they get lost and might not tell anyone where they're going. They might not know where they're going once mm-hmm. they leave.
Yeah, they may forget.
Am I right about that assumption, though?
Yes. And so they may be gone for hours and hours and then ultimately find their way back.
So what I'm sort of segueing into there, I guess it's not a segue for the show, but what I'm leading into is that because it's prior to them being a danger, meaning it's an earlier stage that could happen in, where they still might have enough of their memory to be aware of what's happening. So that you might not be able to easily, you know, just slip their car keys from them.
Oftentimes they just keep trying until something seems that they can recognize something, whether it be a freeway or highway or an exit, or they just keep driving.
Oh,
and when they come, even know when they come home mm-hmm. that they were gone for 3 hours that should have been 20 minutes.
Oh, right. Yeah. 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 There's that too. Oh, yeah. There definitely would be a justification for I think not necessarily on a societal level, because I don't really see the danger in that, but definitely on a household level, that the caretakers are essentially responsible for them, that for them to be able to pretty much they're at a certain stage, I would imagine they're almost guaranteed to get lost.
Yes. So now stage 5 is called moderately.
You know, I guess I hadn't really thought of that before, but at a certain point it would seem to me that they would always get lost every time they left the house. And basically not know
where
they live.
Depends on where they're going. Maybe they're just going to the microwave to pick up a microwave.
Well, I'm thinking if they haven't lived somewhere since, you know, they were a young person, then wouldn't they eventually forget how to get home?
They don't have to be that young. I mean, it's like I gave the example that Duane in particular felt he believed that he was in college.
Okay.
And he was in his late 60s.
So he wouldn't be able to get back home.
So he could still remember his 40s. So yes, he could. He could still, he hadn't gone, I mean, he could still remember some things from his 40s, but part of him felt that he really was.
But did he know where he lived at that moment?
Sometimes.
Okay, so he might be able to get back home.
Yes. He in his case, he did. Some people get lost.
That's interesting.
Some people go out their front door and they get lost walking 2 blocks away.
that does make sense. I know something I've heard of is how many stages are there?
I think there's 7.
Oh, okay. Okay, something I've heard that I'm a little interested in, if maybe you know the answer to this, is in the nursing homes where they will have black rugs.
Oh,
that dementia patients won't walk over.
That is, okay, that's so funny because that's actually, I talk about that in my book. You must have read it. Maybe that's where you got that from.
I think that is
a black carpet, especially if it's in a circle, a dementia patient, when he's at the point where he needs to go to a nursing home or she needs to go to a nursing home, they don't recognize a black rug as a black rug. What they see is a hole. So they don't escape as often. So I've always recommended that somebody...
Because they're not willing to jump in a hole.
They don't want to cross over. They just stop in their tracks because they see a hole. We see a black carpet. They see a hole. Now, nobody knows why, but it happens often enough where nursing homes all over have black carpets
now
in their entrance.
So I wonder how people know that they see a hole, though. I mean, is it like if you sort of...
They can sometimes say it, or they just stop and they'll ask, what do you see?
Oh, okay.
You know, and they're like, well, I don't want to fall, you know, in that, you know, pit that goes to, you know, to Lucifer.
Okay, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So I actually had recommended it for, I told you about the gal. It's actually her granddaughter who called me.
Oh, so if you're a caretaker then?
Yes.
Okay.
The caretakers in their own homes can put a black carpet. And it comes from the nursing homes that discovered this. It came from doctors that discovered. I don't know exactly what's going on in the mind of a demented person, but it seems to be common enough where these nursing homes will do it.
Okay.
And it's just to stop. They become escape artists because they don't know you. They don't even know why they're there. They don't know anything. I mean, they just think that these people are bossing them around, this crazy... You know, if it's a woman, this crazy man is saying, you know, get in my car. We're going to do something. She's like, I don't even know you. So they learn how to escape, or they're always constantly trying to escape when you don't expect it. So
I guess, especially if they don't know what's going on because they can't remember the most recent past in very late stages, then they would always be trying to. It doesn't surprise me that they'd always be trying to do that.
Okay, so I want you to imagine something. So we're going to... That you are right now in a recording studio, mm-hmm. which you are.
Yeah.
A guy you've never seen before in your life walks in the door of the studio and says, Nick, come with me. You're getting in my car. You've never seen him before.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do? And he's a huge man. And he could, you know, overpower you if he had to.
Probably grab a weapon.
Okay.
But
so
possibly I could, I mean, that's I definitely think about that. I'd sort of assess like how much of a, is this a situation that's a threat on my life or... Yeah, is this someone that I know that I'm mistaken about? You know, so I guess I don't know the answer to that, but I could respond.
I can tell you what I would do. Somebody walked into the studio I didn't know, you know,
I would
let's say three men came in and said, you're coming. I would say, oh yeah, is not happening. And I would leave. My point is.
I would definitely need a good reason.
My point is.
Yeah.
That's how a dementia person feels. They don't know these people telling them what to do.
Yeah.
They don't know somebody that just walked into their bedroom and they're sleeping, telling them that they have to get up, you know, instructing them to hop in the shower, take your clothes off and go in the shower. Mm-hmm. They've never seen that person before. That's the first time they've ever seen him.
And so, they haven't had a shower in a month.
And their instinct is to protect themselves. They still have survival instincts.
Right.
So I think it's important that caretakers put themselves in the shoes of somebody that has dementia when they don't know someone, they really don't.
Okay.
So fortunately, in Dwayne's case, he was so mild-mannered, he would just think it was a new friend.
Yeah, there's a lot of situations I can think of where, you know, I mean, I suppose for myself, for example, I genuinely don't know, I could be curious, you know, what reason should I have to do this or that? But I could easily see how many things could be perceived as a threat also. So I guess it would, like you said, it would depend on the person. So in your father's case, like you said, he's mild-mannered and a very optimistic person. I believe very friendly is how you described him before. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So in his case, it would he be an ideal case as far as like his personality?
Yes, I believe so.
And how hostile was he?
He was very rarely would he get agitated. There is something with dementia. It's called sundowning. And it's just, and this is with most dementia patients when they're in the later stages. At night, they call it sundowning because they are restless and they do get agitated, even the most mild manner of, you know, just their natural character prior to, you know, developing dementia. So, yeah. Yeah.
And so a person that is not agreeable, I mean, how hostile can someone potentially be?
Okay. I wasn't going to go there, but I'm going to do it now. A lot of nursing homes now have dementia wings where they have special caregivers, special orderlies, special nurses that deal specifically with dementia, because prior to that, there was a lot of violence in nursing homes and murders. Dementia patients would take a bat or anything they could get and would kill either another patient, resident, because they felt they were delusional and they thought that person was going to hurt them.
Yeah.
So a lot of nursing homes, there was a time where they wouldn't even take a dementia patient, but it's much more common that they have a dementia wing.
Okay.
So yes, it's now that's something that
I'd be curious what some of the, like, I know with the nurses, I'm just guessing here, that you'd probably want a combination of some very physically capable people, like, you know, security kind of nurses, and then probably some that appear to be as unthreatening, friendly as possible, I imagine.
Yes, because that's what it is. If somebody is perceived as a threat, would scare me if I didn't know who they were and didn't know why I was there. And they're all of a sudden they're giving me a bath. You know, I might kick them in the head.
So you might only have those security related. You know, you'd have them there when needed, I guess.
And another thing about nursing
but
homes,
I'm just guessing.
Yes, and something else about nursing homes is that's their job, so they never get irritated.
They know it's not personal.
They do. Yes, they know it's not personal. But if someone asks them a question like, "What's for breakfast?" They'll say, "We're having, you know, eggs and bacon for breakfast." 2 minutes later, "What's for breakfast?" They'll just repeat the answer because they know that the person has memory loss.
Okay.
Where a family member will say something like, "I told you that 10 times." The dementia patient doesn't know that. That was the first time. That was the first time that they've asked the question.
Yeah, that is something that when I've heard that before, and whenever I've heard that, I've you know, thought to myself, you know, shouldn't they know that, you know, they should know that it doesn't matter how many times they tell them. But now that you mention it, because they're so personally involved and they might not necessarily, well, their personal involvement.
It's hard because they're answering the same question over and over and over. Yeah. Somebody that, where it's their job, they can just be kind and they just answer it. They just answer it. Like, well, you know, they'll just say, give them the same answer because they understand that the person has dementia. It would be like telling somebody that is blind, like, just look harder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, well, they're not going to be able to, someone with dementia, you know, just, you can't tell them to just remember something when they have a disease that robs them of their memory.
Oh.
Okay, Nick, so it looks like we are running out of time. So next week we'll have a part two of our talk on dementia, and we'll get to the final stages, and then, of course, the end stage of dementia.
How many more, can you give like a quick summary of the remaining stages?
Well, the remaining stages would be 5, 6, and 7, or the finishing up on 5 and 6 and 7. And 7 would be, they call it end stage. And that's pretty much close to death. That's when somebody is 6 months or less to live. unfortunately, people, once they're actually diagnosed, which is usually about stage five, you know, between four and five, the life expectancy, unfortunately, is about 4 to 10 years.
Okay. And from what I understand, with many of those, the disease actually kills them. Do you know exactly how that happens?
Okay, well...
I know we don't have much time.
Okay, we don't have time. You know, we're going to have to talk about that next week, but okay. I can say the number one cause of people that die from dementia is falling.
Oh, interesting.
And breaking their hip, and I will explain why next week, because it doesn't seem like there's any connection between the two, but there is.
Okay.
Anyway, the bottom line is the wretched disease, but... you know, I did write this little book about it. The book is on Amazon. If anybody's interested, it's called Daughters of Dementia. And it's by Leslie Berkland and Lindsay Denhoff. That's my sister. And the book has done quite well. A lot of nursing homes have actually ordered the book. They've ordered several books. A lot of libraries have ordered the book. And the response I've gotten has been really wonderful and just heartwarming. I've had people call me crying because someone will say, my wife died and I wish I would have had this book, because there are certain things that are, I always say you have to laugh sometimes, because if you don't see the you know, things that are actually funny, like if the demented person says something, just because they can be quite humorous too. And if you don't laugh, it's not being demeaning or being mean. It's just, you have to sometimes, otherwise you'll just be crying all day. Because it really is just a horrible disease. And I hope that they find a cure or some medicine. They haven't really, there's been some types of medicine that they think are, you know, is pretty successful. And the Alzheimer's Association in particular, they're doing a lot of research. And so that's why I'm a member of that association. And I give to that association. I go to a lot of their auctions, and I've actually purchased, you know, artwork from dementia patients, which is just pretty extraordinary. And if anybody wants to contact myself or even Nick, and if you have any questions regarding dementia or some, you know, particular any kind of form of dementia, you can give us just write to us. At thebrighterlife@mail.com. So that's thebrighterlife@mail.com. Is that right, Nick?
Yes.
Okay.
And mail as in mail in a letter.
Oh, as opposed, okay. Oh, I never.
As opposed to a male female.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, that is correct, because it's, yeah, okay. Anyway, thank you for listening to us, and we will, you know, you'll hear from us next week, and have a wonderful rest of your day.
Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.